Welcome to Recess Duty, a podcast for educators to come together to share struggles, but also celebrate successes by sharing stories and ideas in a safe and supportive environment to collaborate with one another. Here's your host, Levi Allison.
Hey everyone, this is Recess Duty with your host, Levi Allison. And today we're talking with PYP educator and leader, Dorian Garrigan. Thank you so much, Dorian, for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Levi. It's been really fun to watch and listen to you grow this podcast and to reach out. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Well, to give everybody at home and our listeners a little insight and to be fully transparent, Dorian was a colleague of mine back in Shanghai, and it is so good to connect with you again because it's always a wonderful time to learn and with you. And I know as somebody who is a risk taker and as a continuous learner, I knew it'd be great to have you on the podcast to share your experiences. So Dorian, for those of us listening, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, let's see. I think this is my 32nd or 33rd year in education. I sometimes forget. I have to list out all the schools. This is my third international school. Yeah. What I like to tell people about myself is I spent the first 20 years in the classroom. So I really loved teaching. It was my passion through and through. Started out teaching first grade. Then I went up to fifth and sixth, taught all the grades in between in gifted education, which was really my niche when I was recruited to join as a gifted education specialist. And that's really where I fell in love with concept-based learning. And for 10 years, I was in gifted education in the state of Virginia. Although I'm a California girl, I do own up to having lived on the East Coast. But when I went abroad, I went searching and I found my home in the IB. So I was a PYP coordinator at the American International School of Bucharest for 5 years, which was a fantastic experience, not only as a learner coming from curriculum itself, but also in that middle leadership position. My youngest daughter graduated from there. So I always tell parents I'm an IB mom, having gone through the MYP and the diploma with Rachel. And then I went over to Shanghai, which was insane at the time to leave Europe and go to Asia. But it was the best decision professionally, where I served as primary school principal at the Western International School of Shanghai, where you and I met and really formed a lovely friendship. And now I'm in my third year at Escola Americana do Rio de Janeiro in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. So I am somewhere around 32, 33 years. It's been fun.
Wow. What a life and a home that you have built in IB and around the world and in education. So in those 32 years and all the learning that's been, what is something that you are doing now that you thought this would never have happened?
Starting PYP from the ground up. I came into a well-established school in Bucharest and, you know, coming into a program that was already part of the community's identity was an easier entrance into IB for sure. So I was privileged to learn from IB educators that were already in classrooms, as well as when I went to Shanghai. You know, building PYP from the ground up at a school that was 83 years old when I started in the middle of a pandemic was a large, large task. But we just pressed the application button on Thursday for authorization. And we are so excited and we're so ready. And it was just a really fun day to gather with teachers. We all wore blue and we had this catchphrase of pressing the big blue button, although somewhere in the process, it actually turned green, but we didn't tell the teacher. it was really a joyful day, and we're just ready for them to come and see the work that we're doing. So I would have to say, you know, introducing and building PYP in an already established, well-established school has been the journey of a lifetime.
It sounds like, and having, you know, stayed connected with you and having chatted for the last 2 years, I know it's been a big undertaking. I know COVID in Brazil has been very difficult, and as it has around the world, but what was something that your teachers were successful in, and what was something that your school struggled with going into IB for future teachers who may want to join IB? You know, we on Twitter and on LinkedIn, we have several discussions of how do I start PYP? How do I get into PYP? What is PYP? So as someone who's just went through a full accreditation application, what is something you can tell people?
I think it starts at the very beginning of asking the question, why? Mm-hmm. Why IB? Schools, you know, around the world that are successful and are not IB, when that question is raised, there has to be a clear reason to enter into the conversation. So for my school, it was already a well-established top choice in the city of Rio. But the question that our headmaster, Dr. Nigel Winard, asked was, you know, what's next? And he saw the need for a stronger vertical alignment of curriculum. And I would say for any school considering, the really important part is that feasibility study. Mm-hmm. Because you first have to ask, is this even feasible? There are so many factors that go into even discussing whether or not to become an IB school, because it's not just a one-off and you're done and slap the logo on your website. It's a commitment to creating change and to creating different types of learning, I guess, pathways, if you will, for the children. Mm-hmm. So when I go back now and I read that feasibility study and I see just how far we've come from the board level to the parents to the day-to-day running of our school and how we interact with kids, I didn't know the school before the candidacy. Mm-hmm. So I came in to facilitate that process. But all I can say is, you know, the teachers really owned their own learning. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a school needs to decide, do we want to embrace this as an ongoing identity in the future? And it starts with feasibility.
For sure. And we've had this conversation before about, you know, there are amazing schools out there that are not IB. There's amazing schools that are IB. And there are some schools that are not so amazing that are neither or are IB. And I don't think IB makes a school great. And I think what you're saying about there is getting to the why. Are we doing this for the right reasons? Are we doing this to have the logo, or are we doing this to enact change? So when you're looking for teachers, because as someone who hires multiple teachers, multiple grade levels, multiple subjects, what are you looking for those change makers out in the world?
You know, honestly, Levi, recruitment is one of my favorite responsibilities.
I know it is. I know. I only asked because we were at the Bangkok fair together, and I remember every breakfast we would meet and be like, what are you doing? How's this going? What is? And it was so much fun.
Yeah. You know, I honestly really enjoy the process because I like to build teams. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I look at a teacher who's leaving, I look at their skill set. I look at what they brought to the table. You know, I say to teachers often, what's your footprint? You can stay 2 years and have a really deep, impactful footprint on a school. You can stay 10 years and really just be a soft print on the sand. It really is about that impact. So if I'm losing a teacher that has had a significant footprint, then I'm targeting, you know, what is going to be lost, mm-hmm. In that person leaving. And then I go out going, okay, is that skill set still something we need? Is that attitude or the way that person related to others still a need on that team? And then I look at it from across the division. So it's always been kind of a myriad of needs, mm-hmm. when I'm going out to recruit, but I do weigh heavily on team dynamics. Right now I have a majority Brazilian division. Mm-hmm. Which is something that really attracted me when I said yes to Brazil. I had not worked with or in a school that had a large host country dominance. And so I now look at my expat recruitment strategy in terms of how will this person assimilate into Brazilian culture, very different from China, which was more about needing to bring the pedagogy. Because Brazilians have strong pedagogy. They come from university and experiences with the know-how. So if I don't bring in a person who is open to building relationships and having a level of emotion and vulnerability, they probably won't do very well because Brazilians are deeply rooted in connections and confidence. So knowing that dynamic, I would say for anyone wanting to go into PYP, just the willingness to learn is the first step, but also look at the school's dynamics to ensure that you are ready to go into an international setting, as well as be a brand new learner to perhaps having to shift some pedagogical practices.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm hearing is going through this application, you had to look very heavily when the last 2-3 years when you were recruiting for people who could not only assimilate into Brazilian culture, but also to assimilate to this new why behind your school.
Yeah, absolutely. We had to target people with PYP experience because that was something we didn't have. So mm-hmm. I was brought in as principal because of my PYP background. The fact that I'm a workshop leader and school site visitor was also important to the overall senior leadership team. Mm-hmm. My coordinator has been in IB for 23 years. So her wealth of experience in Japan was such a benefit. The initial teachers that came in when I came in, also 6 or more years of PYP. Last year, we only hired expats with PYP experience. It will probably be another candidate who's not coming from PYP because of the fact that around 70% of my staff is Brazilian. So we are embedding that PYP experience with the expats to help share the wealth of knowledge and experiences. But eventually we will get to a place where we'll be looking for teachers who want to learn, and we will be that school that can say, here's what it looks like at EA.
And listeners out there, I can highly attest and give a review that working with and for Doreen is an absolute pleasure. So be a lookout for that school because it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, Doreen, we're really excited about where we're going.
For sure. And, you know, watching the videos on LinkedIn of what you've posted and the journey, I should say, of your school and a view of yourself has been absolutely a pleasure to watch, to see how not only have you embraced this new idea, but you've also really stepped in there and walked this new walk that maybe you weren't comfortable before. But look at what it has accomplished. Yeah. Look at the team that you have created of this culture of learning and this community of, you know, mm-hmm. we don't know. We were highly established. We're going to something that we're not established in. And yet we know we're going to do okay. And I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, I literally stand on the shoulders of the previous principals. I really do. Whenever a leader comes into a new school, it's so important to internally audit, which mm-hmm. really just means listen. Mm-hmm. Take note. What's going well? You know, I've used the same 3 questions in every school I've been in whether it was a coordinator or a principal's role. What's going well? Let's talk about making sure we keep that going. What's challenging? You know, what's an obstacle? And then the last question I always ask is, you know, what do you need to feel successful? Because we want to feel successful with our kids. Mm-hmm. We want to feel and know that they are learning, that they're developing into good human beings. And so for each person, that may look a little different. So I ask that question on a personal level so that I can help that person achieve that level and that feeling of success at the end of the year. And so, you know, the journey, and I've been very honest with you, we've had many, you know, weekend conversations. It wasn't always that walk because mm-hmm. I came in the middle of a crisis. So I really have had to look back over my shoulder and go, wow, you did a lot, girl. Like that was tough work. But now we're in such a good space. And I feel as though this year, I'm really getting to experience my school for all that it is and what I had heard about over and over. Mm-hmm. And that's been really inspiring. Yeah, I'm having a good time.
Yeah, that's so good to hear. Doreen, you know, you talked about success, you've talked about journeys, you've talked about change. As somebody with a very lengthy career and an abundance of knowledge, what is something you wish you could tell younger Doreen?
Oh, wow, great. You know, looking back, I always thought of teaching as an art and a science. And I think it's important when you get bogged down in the BS of the job when parents kind of run you up the flagpole and you feel as though this is really a lot. I keep coming back to, and I would say to my younger self, just stay grounded in what you love. And that is watching kids grow. Because I loved the profession so much, it's been my saving grace in my older years in the profession. And I think there is something to be said about hitting that stride. Mm-hmm. So when it gets tough and in my role, there are definitely elements of it that will test my nerves. I just keep going back to what really matters. What matters is teachers are as free of obstacles as they can be so they can do what they do really well. Mm-hmm. And that is for kids to learn. So I often will go out of my office when I'm sitting on about 15 emails just to go and be around kids. And I think that's something when I look back at my younger self, I really was clear on. And so I would just say to her, stay grounded, girl, stay in what matters. And mm-hmm. that's the kid.
What a good advice for all of us during this crazy time to continue back to our why. And like, yes, we're here for kids, but why for kids? Like, why did we choose to work with kids? Why is it that learning for our younger generation is important and making sure that we continue to remind ourselves of that every day?
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many educational trends that swing back and forth. Mm-hmm. And I have definitely seen a few in my three decades of this profession. And I think each time I saw a headline about, children scoring the worst they've ever scored and, all hell's breaking loose because test scores are so low. And I thought, it's all about perspective. Mm-hmm. And for me, we take a look at information, call it data, call it, student learning evidence, and then we make a plan. Mm-hmm. And so I work really hard not to fall for the headlines that create fear and anxiety and pressures and just say to myself, okay, what do we need to do? We need to take a look at some learning. We need to make a plan. Mm-hmm. And that's where I just continue to kind of move forward with where we are.
Because it is very easy in today of social media and with the news as it is to fall in those gaps and those headlines and creating that chaos within ourselves of, oh, test scores are down. I got to do this. Got to teach to the test. Got to teach to the test. But in reality, if we remind ourselves that we are the experts and that if we look at data and we are being smart about how we look, aggregate and collect this data, we can make our own plans to really calm that chaos in our own minds and create a school that isn't falling for the headline of students aren't doing well. It's more of, students might not be doing well in this, but they're doing really great in this. So we'll look at this.
Exactly. Yeah. I think the power of the terminology. When I was teaching in Virginia during No Child Left Behind, I remember the expression data driven. Mm-hmm. And I had a very powerful, successful principal that I had a great relationship with, but she was definitely in that mindset of data driven everything. And then it was kind of a one swoop answer. And I would have conversations with her about, let's take a look at the specific needs of this particular class or this grade level. And now it's no longer about being data driven, but data informed. And I feel that's a bit more of a comfortable place for me as a leader, because truly data is important, but data can be quantitative and qualitative. And I think for teachers to look at leadership and trust that when we look at data, it's not judgmental. And again, I'm coming from a time period where they posted your name in the newspaper with your student scores. So I've lived that reality as a teacher. And now as a leader, I want to make sure the power is in their hands. They have the autonomy to make the best decisions. And if they're not quite getting it, because again, my background's gifted ed, so I always go looking for the kids that are scoring really high. And then I say, okay, we got a little island. What are we going to do? And if they're not quite comfortable, I give them resources because that's my background. And they know that I have a love and a passion for high ability maths and high ability literacy. So being a part of those conversations as a principal, but also just as an educator, mm-hmm. is really important. And that's one aspect of my school I've been working on with them, to not see leadership as top down and telling them what to do, but that we build that plan together. And then my job is to help get them what they need so that that can happen.
What an amazing quote that you just said, that we plan together, we lead together, and that we make it happen together.
Yeah.
And what a great tagline for an agent of change and someone who is not afraid of change as you are. As an agent of change, you must live and breathe that title.
I think that I've always been comfortable in the chaos, if I can be really frank.
knowing your family, I'm sorry, and knowing your career for the last 6 years, 7 years, yes, yeah. I would also say that. Yeah. And leading a school through a crisis as the new principal, yeah, I can see where chaos is very comfortable.
Yeah, I think I've never been one to look at it just one way. Mm-hmm. And so when you become a leader, it's really about knowing yourself, what your strengths are, and your areas of challenge. I love the protocol compass points. You know, when we talk about building teams, I recently started learning leaders at my school. And this is something that wasn't in place. And I was speaking to Nigel and I was like, I really want to develop teacher leadership and explaining that they are my think tank because they're in the classrooms, right? And I don't want to ever feel as though I'm living in that ivory tower and not accessing the day-to-day runnings of a classroom. But we were talking about our dream team. I was doing a protocol with the teachers, and I put my two current assistant principals on my dream team. And when I was sharing why, it's because they're so different from me. But because I know who I am and what my strengths are, for the most part, I also know where I absolutely do not want to sit. And that, like, for example, I'm not a big data creator. I love to analyze data, but I don't like to create spreadsheets. That to me is a waste of my time. I currently work at a school where spreadsheets are everything. So I have an assistant principal that she does that in her sleep for fun. I'm like, this is awesome. So I'm always like, hey, Sue, let's create a spreadsheet. You create it. And then I'll just, but I also realize I have to learn how to create them better. And then my other assistant principal, who's also a fellow Californian, she's all about emotions, and she'll come in and she'll go, all right, ladies, let's check in and see how we're feeling. And it's just the best dynamic because we each know. They know that I'm a West. East. They know that I'm an East, and I'm all about big picture and vision work and all of that strategy stuff. So we are very aware of how we come into team and how we work together. So that's just something when I think about agent of change, man, I don't do that alone. I bring a team and we make it work. And for my team now, we met in the middle of a global pandemic and we were thrust into the hurricane. And we laugh about it now, but the things that we were tasked with doing with 420 kids, parents crying on the phone, not confident at all about distance learning, what have you. It's such a blessing that we were together. I can't explain it any other way. Mm-hmm. So going back to agent of change, I do not do that alone. I have an amazing team.
And for those people who, you know, may not have a team around them, you know, you actually mm-hmm. gave me, it was either you or Renee Couturier, who's a great friend of ours in Shanghai, America.
Yeah.
Love her. But I'll never forget that I think it was you now, I'm thinking about it, said you are the average of the three people you spend the most time around. And for those of you, and for those of people who may not have assistant principals or may not have a large team, who are you spending your time with? Who are you spending those periods of planning around? Are they uplifting? Are they looking for change? Are they looking for great ideas? Or maybe like you were talking about, like leaving a soft footprint. What is that footprint going to look like? And it is something that I, for the last 5 years, have carried with me is, who am I spending my most time in? Are they increasing my knowledge, my understanding, and my changeability?
Yeah. You can definitely see that in schools. Mm-hmm. I've been fortunate to watch, you know, one teacher just start with a new resource. And the next thing you know, teachers are asking, hey, can I come in and watch?
Yeah.
Could we get together over a planning period or a lunch? And before you know it, it's already in practice. That happened these last 2 years at my school around mathematics. I came in and they had a resource called Engage New York, which was fine during the pandemic, but we were really wanting to look at something more inquiry based and concept driven. And one of our teachers discovered San Francisco Maths, and she started just doing the lessons and sharing how excited she was. And now over half of our grade levels are fully committed to using it. And it didn't need to come from me. It came from them and the way in which it made them feel as mm-hmm. math teachers. And that's just gold in my book.
When
teachers kind of buy into something that you see the results in the kids. So we are continuing to expand on that. But again, it grew from a collective base of teachers. So I think those kind of moments, you just have to relish when they happen.
Of course. And because they do happen so few and far between that we have to hold on to those. And it is something that I know that we both agree on. Doreen, where mm-hmm. can people find you and connect with you if they want to continue learning with you?
Well, I try my best to be active on social media. I go through waves. One of the things I learned since coming out of China was no one really uses Facebook, which is great because that's more my family and friends social media. But I am on Twitter and I am on Instagram as well as LinkedIn. LinkedIn's probably the best place for professional connections. I'm happy for anyone to message and just reach out and want to talk. When I give workshops, I do leave my social media and my email. So I've had participants from several years ago still stay in touch and let me know where they are. Yeah.
That is always the most fun as somebody who attends lots of workshops. It is a lot of fun seeing where we all grow and end up. So Doreen, a question we ask all guests here on the Recess Duty is, what do you remember about Recess growing up?
Tetherball. And whenever I broke a bone, I broke both my wrists like 2 years in a row. I was really good at tetherball because I would slap that ball with my cast. So I wasn't the most athletic child. I was more about I was actually like student body secretary in sixth grade. So maybe that was the beginning. But when I had a broken bone and a cast on my wrist, I was really good at tetherball. So that was a moment of great pride for me.
Oh, gosh, Doreen, thank you so much for sharing. Doreen, thank you so much for coming to this week's episode of Recess Duty. Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss our next episode. I'm Levi Allison, and I hope you have a great day of learning, everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Recess Duty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, please share this podcast with other educators so they can join the fun. And that is the end of our Recess Duty.